The story of the Exodus is probably filled with dozens upon dozens of lessons. But I say that there is enormous meaning in this last day that we keep. The people, of course, on the first day had gathered at Ramses. They had taken the Passover. They had gathered spoil from the Egyptians. And then on that first night, they began their journey to a promised land. And they traveled by day and by night. And they camped at the seashore on that last day, or the day before the last day. And Pharaoh had gotten word, of course, and he had gone after them, as we heard earlier in the reading, just like Satan goes after us when we make our escape from this world, when God calls us. Imagine that, 600 chariots and all the rest of the chariots and the infantry marching at a running pace to catch up to the people of God. They traveled by day and night and camped that day. Can you imagine camping next to the Israelites? Yes, there was a cloud there. But can you imagine them hearing their enemy, the clanking of their weapons, the talk that they would hear coming through, the fear that would pierce these people, the hesitation they would have? Can you imagine if it were you there and you heard them right next to you? You can imagine the spear piercing through your guts, tearing you to pieces. That's what they were facing, terribly afraid at that time. But God told Moses what he was going to do. Then Moses told the people, and he said this in Exodus 14, back in Exodus 14, this time in verse 13. And Moses said unto the people, "Fear you not, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will show you today. For the Egyptians whom you have seen today, you shall see them again, no more forever. The Lord shall fight for you, and you shall hold your peace." And then the Lord said unto Moses, "Why do you cry unto me? Speak unto the children of Israel, and tell them this, go forward. Go forward." This is the great, if you will, the majestic theme of these last days of unleavened bread. God's people are to go forward. They were baptized in the Red Sea. They were to leave Egypt completely behind them. They were to leave sin completely behind them. And they did, didn't they? They left Egypt. And they went through that Red Sea, and they were protected, and they were saved. And they left all of Egypt behind. But they took some of Egypt with them in their minds, didn't they? They took some of Egypt in their minds and in their lives. And so later, they knew how to build a golden calf when they thought that Moses had delayed his coming, just like many today think the Lord has delayed his. And so they would complain about the leadership that God gave them. They would fear the giants. They would fear the obstacles that they had to face. They would lack faith that God would provide. And they would desire to go back to Egypt. Turn over to Exodus 16 and in verse 3. "And the whole congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the children of Israel said unto them, Would to God we died by the hand of in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots, when we did eat bread to the full. For you've brought us out forth into this wilderness to kill the whole assembly with hunger." You get my picture. They left Egypt. But they wanted to hold on to some of the things of the past. And it became their death sentence. And so today, I ask us, what about us? Are we going forward after our baptism? Or do we want to hold on to some of our old ways? Because if we do, eventually they will trap us. Now, there's some people that are trappers of monkeys. And they will go into Africa and trap these monkeys. And the way they do it's rather interesting. They will build a cage in which the bars are very close to one another so that a monkey can just barely get his hand inside the cage. And they put the cage out in the open area where it's highly visible. and they'll make it as exposed as possible, and then they'll put bananas inside the cage, plenty of ripe, juicy bananas. Then they wait. Eventually, a monkey will come along. He'll see those bananas, and he'll come over and inspect the cage, and he'll sniff and he'll smell those bananas, and then he'll reach his hand inside the cage, and he'll grab a banana, and he'll try to pull it out, but it won't come out of the cage because the bars are too close together. And he'll find that with that banana clutched in his hand, it's just way too big to pull through the cracks. And so the trappers then come. The monkey sees them, and he gets terribly frightened. He becomes afraid, scared. He'll try to run away. He'll wiggle and pull with all his might, but he won't let go of the banana. And so the trappers can come and just grab him, and they have caught him. Now, the point I make is that Satan uses this same kind of approach and the very same principle to us. We have been baptized, and we've left sin behind, but we sometimes want to hold on to some of those things of our old life and our old way, and we won't let them go. And when we do this, it brings us to a point where we can get trapped and where we can be taken. We latch on to those things of this life. We won't let go of a particular thing. We become the prey of the one who hunts us, the roaring lion, Satan the devil. So there's things that we won't let go, and they bring us down spiritually, and they keep us in bondage. Do we want to let those things go, or do we want to continue to hold on to them? Do we want to hold on to them no matter how bad things get? Let's go to John 5. There was a time when Jesus went to Jerusalem. There was an interesting experience that he had, and it's talked about here in John 5. He met a man who had been suffering, if you can imagine this, for 38 years, unable to walk, unable to get up. And the Apostle John records the account here, starting in verse 1. After this, there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Now there was at Jerusalem by the sheep market a pool, which is called in the Hebrew tongue Bethesda, having five porches. And in these lay a great multitude of impotent folk, of blind and halt and withered, waiting for the moving of the water. For the angel went down at a certain season into the pool and troubled the water. Whosoever then was first after the troubling of the water, stepped in, was made whole of whatever disease he had. And a certain man was there which had an infirmity 38 years. And when Jesus saw him lie, and he knew that he had been there a long time in that case, he said unto him, "Will you be made whole?" Now he asked him a pretty funny question, don't you think? 38 years, you know? It seems to us like it'd be a pretty obvious answer, wouldn't it? You've been there 38 years, you've no way to get to the pool, no one to let you in, and do you want to be made whole? Seems like an obvious answer. Why would he ask him such a question? You know, Jesus already knew the man's plight. He was unable to walk or stand for over 38 years, probably suffering great pain. So why ask the question? Well, I say that Christ could look into people's minds. Remember Nathanael? He said, "I saw you under the tree," because he knew what he was thinking. He could look in. He knew their motives. He knew what was in people's minds, and he knew their thoughts. And he knows things about you, and he knows things about you, and he knows things about me that even we haven't faced. He knows things that we don't even know about ourselves. And so there is a reason he asked this question. 38 years can have an enormously devastating effect on some people. You know, so many years of discouragement can paralyze a person's mind. That's what can happen. You know, after this long, hope can die in some people. And sometimes people become comfortable as they live with this continuing dull despair of a life. And they will become sometimes envious of others. They can turn to bitterness. Some can even turn to anger towards God for this plight that they've been put in. And some actually prefer to remain invalid. I know you don't think of that, but they want to hold on to it. Because once you're an invalid and handicapped, you're not like everybody else, you understand? People feel sorry for you. If you were to lose that by getting well, you lose your social special status to everybody, don't you? For example, today, many people have a preoccupation with victimization. I mean, everybody's a victim. There isn't one of us that hasn't been a victim in our life, really. But sometimes people will grab a hold of this, and they will build a monument to it, and they'll blame others for the situation that they're in. And it helps them. It's a crutch to them. There are some who I've known who have suffered abuse, and then they focus on the abuse, and it becomes their identity, and they build this monument to it, and it becomes their reason for being special. It becomes their excuse for not accepting the responsibility of living everyday life. And sometimes I've seen people who have been handicapped that have used their infirmity to actually have power over others. And they order the others what to do for them, and they tell them what to do. So you understand, it becomes a reason for being special, and it's an excuse to not accept responsibility in life. And so they can use it to serve themselves, and they can use it as an excuse sometimes to be lazy. So some find being infirm to be pleasant. They don't have to be responsible. They don't have to shoulder the burdens of life that every normal person has to shoulder. They don't have to work hard, worry about things, and others will help them with their life. And others will blame the problems they have on genetics in life. You know, it's not their fault. People are alcoholics because their parents were alcoholics. People are homosexual because they were born with a predisposition. We want to blame others and make excuses. We want to hold on to the things that make us sick in life. We want to hold on to that keeps us or allows us to keep sinning the sin that we sin. So most people in this world don't want to be made whole, do they? They don't really want to be made whole. You know, whatever level of infirmity or victimization they have experienced, they really don't want to be made whole. You know, if a person really wants to be made whole, half of the battle is already over. Once you know you want to change, you want to be a better person. So Christ asked this man this question: do you really want to let it go? Do you really want to let it go? Do you want to let go of this disease? Do you want to let go of this lifestyle? What do you really want? Well, in some way, this event was connected to sin. We don't know exactly how it is, but he told him, take up your bed and walk. Later, he went to the temple, and he found the man because he had something he wanted to say to him, and it was this in verse 14. Afterward, Jesus found him in the temple, and he said unto him, behold, you're made whole. Sin no more, lest a worse thing come upon you. And so we don't know if this man's illness was directly connected to a particular sin of his, but Christ did warn him to sin no more, because if he did, a worse thing could come on him. So the man was going to have to let sin go. Likewise, each one of us have pieces of sin in our lives, pieces of our past. And Christ wants to save us, but what he wants to save us from is these sins. He desires to heal each one of us. That's his desire. Everything that hurts us, everything that restricts us from having all we could have in life, being all that we could be in life, he wants us to have that and to enjoy it. The real question is this: do we want it? Do we want what he wants for us? Do we want to be healed of those things? So this is the real issue today, and it is the very issue that this infirm man faced. Do we really want to be healed of our sins? Are we willing to let go of what is limiting us? Do you and I want to go forward in our lives? That's what this day is picturing. You know, all of us pick up some baggage in life. Every one of us carries some. And I remember I met a person a long time ago, and they said, yeah, I have some baggage. A little bit, you know. I don't need a U-Haul truck to carry it around. But I thought it was funny, because some of us have we've got wagons, and we're carrying it everywhere, dragging it everywhere we go, carrying this baggage around, you know. Gets really heavy sometimes. So we're all carrying baggage of some sort. And usually the baggage is connected to some kind of sin. Do we want to jettison that baggage that is holding us back? Do we want to continue holding on, as it were, to our banana? That's the issue today. Ephesians 3. For a brief moment today, let's go ahead and face the truth head on. Let's have a real honest look at this issue. Here is the issue. You have the power to overcome anything in life. Anything. You have that power. Anything you want to overcome, because we have all power available to us. Jesus Christ has all the power in the universe. He can do anything. There's nothing impossible to him to do. Virtually nothing impossible. The issue is he can do more, even more than you might want. He's capable of doing it. And it says that here. Verse 20 of chapter 3. Now unto him that's able to do exceedingly abundantly above all that we ask or even think, according to the power that works in us. So we can do anything that we want to do in this life. We can overcome any sin that we want to overcome. The problem is we simply don't really want to overcome it. We've become fairly comfortable in it. We don't want to let it go. You understand my point? Sin can become pleasurable in the moment. Overeating, that's pleasurable. Venting our nasty feelings, as I've been done and caught myself doing, you know. It can be enjoyable in the way you feel at the moment. As you vent, you get it out. Feel better, don't you? You see, there's a positive appeal. I mean, if you're drinking a little too much, it can have a nice appeal sometimes to drink too much. But then it has kickbacks. And so some of the habits that we have in life can become comfortable to us, you know. They're like an old friend. And so when we let go of something, we experience a loss. Experiencing any kind of loss is painful. And so we act on the pain-pleasure principle. We want to seek pleasure, and we want to avoid pain. And sometimes it's a painful experience to have a little bit of us cut off, cut away from us. My question today is this. Those people left Egypt, didn't they? And they kept thinking, you know, how good it was back there and how I enjoyed this and how I enjoyed that. Maybe the bondage was worth it, you know. You see how silly that thinking is. Do the same thing. We do the same thing in our own lives, don't we? We don't want to go through the withdrawal. We don't want to experience the loss. Sometimes it's even hard to think about it. So whatever the issue is, we can overcome if we really want to. He will help us with all the power in the entire universe at his disposal. He will help us overcome if we really want to do it. And the issue is this, and the issue will always be this. Do you want to? Do you want to? That is the important thing. Do you want to let go and go forward with Jesus Christ? That is the issue of this day and the issue of our lives. Whatever it is, it may be dragging us down. We can let it go. We can take a part in this that we have, and that is to be willing to say, here it is. Put it on his altar, if you will. But it takes something from you, and it takes something from me. It takes faith, doesn't it, to let go? Now, I know probably a lot of people have heard this illustration, but there were it really fits well in this particular sermon, so I want to use it. There were a couple, a man and a woman, and they were walking along a path up in the mountains by Mount Wilson. And the man slipped, and he fell. And as he did, he was clawing. I did this once. I was falling down a cliff, and I was clawing, trying to get a grasp, digging my nails into the dirt as he went down. And pretty soon, his fingers were hurting, and then they got bloody. And then finally, his arm came upon a branch, and he grabbed a hold of the branch, and he was holding on for dear life. And he said, "God, God, help me, help me." And then he heard a voice, and the voice said, "Do you really believe I can help you?" He said, "Oh, yes, Lord, I believe you can help me." He said, "If you really believe that I'm God and you really believe I can help you, let go." And then the man said, "Is there anybody else out there?" But you understand my point. It may be a time-worn illustration, but look at how vital it fits today's message, doesn't it? If we really believe God, we'd let go, wouldn't we? And he'd take care of us. But we're afraid sometimes. So it makes the point. We think we want to let go, but the question is always this. Hey, if I let go, then what? What's it going to look like after I let go? How's my life going to be? Am I still going to have pleasure? Am I still going to have the things I think I need? You understand? We worry about that. We don't want to let go. You know, is he really going to be there? You know? But I want you to think about it for a minute. Lucifer couldn't let go of the power that he had. He couldn't accept that humans might one day rule over him. And so he felt forced to take control to maintain what he already had. His banana was his power over the earth. And no one was going to take that from him, you understand? And Adam, he wasn't deceived, was he? But he ate anyway. Why? He wouldn't let go of being on the same page with his wife. You know, he couldn't have that disparity. Have you ever seen people leave the church because their mate leaves? You understand my point? Would not let go. Enoch was different, though, wasn't he? He was different from everybody else. He walked with God. He didn't go their way. He went God's way. And he had to let everything go to be able to do that. And so God took him away from all those people. Noah left everything as he knew it. He left all humanity. And the earth that he knew before, he left it all behind. Abraham let go of his homeland, let go of his friends, beloved people, and he was even willing to let go of his son, who he loved so much. Even willing to do that. Joseph, he had to let go of his bitterness that he had with his brothers, didn't he? He cried over that one, but then he let it go, didn't he? And loved them. Yes, he let go. Paul had worked so hard to get credentialed, and the religion of his day, the religion of the Jews. I mean, I have this credential, that credential, I've been taught by the best guys ever. But he had to let that go, and when he did, you know, he looked back, he says, it was just dung. It was just dung, really, in comparison to what I have with Jesus Christ. To me, Moses was a great example of this. Hebrews 11, if you'll go over to Hebrews 11, I'll read a short, brief account of Moses again. In verse 24, by faith Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproaches of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. And so by faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. And if we can see that, if we can see that this whole thing that went on in Egypt, this entire Exodus, all the plagues, everything that went on, all of that was done, and those people's lives were consumed with this, and yet they were people that had hopes and dreams just like you and me, weren't they? Just like us. And yet all of this that went on wasn't about them. It was an example for us. Can you imagine that? I mean, like, how important do you think what he's doing now is? if all that was just to be there as an example for you and me today, how worth it is it to leave this world behind? So the Bible reveals time and time again, case after case of people who were willing to let go of the anchors in their life. And then it shows examples of people who wanted to hold on. Instead of growing, they stagnated or went backwards. But on the days of unleavened bread, we're to rehearse this story, to reevaluate our lives in the light of the exodus from sin. You know, some of us have our own private agendas sometimes. What are our secret desires? What are some of our secret addictions? And what kind of tortured logic do we use sometime to rationalize and justify keeping a hold of something we know God doesn't want us to stay a hold of? How do we do this? Do we want God's help to overcome it? Do we want his power so that we can really make a difference? That's the important thing, I think. Because if we do, we need to start right here. Start right here. Start today. Start on this day of unleavened bread. Let go of the banana. Start by letting go of the sin. But first, we got to know where we are in life, don't we? We have to understand exactly where do we stand here. To me, there's an interesting illustration about this. William Allen White was the editor of the Emporia Gazette, and he was an extremely staunch member of the Democratic Party. I mean, extremely staunch member. But as a part of the magazine, he found himself having to be the reporter that covered the Republican convention. So he's at the Republican convention, and they asked him, would you give the invocation for us? And he said, absolutely not. No, thank you. And he said, I got two reasons for this. One is I'm really not eloquent and practiced in the art of giving public prayers. The other thing is I don't want God to know I'm here. But you understand the point. Are we ever someplace we don't want God to know we're there? Yeah, we've been there, haven't we? Been there and done that. So anyway, the point of today is that, you know, we want God to be with us wherever we are, and we need to live in a way that is acceptable to him. Let's go to Hebrews 12. Hebrews 12, we'll stay there. So do we want God to know where we are in our lives? Because this is the beginning, I believe, of real Christian growth. And it happens when we admit where we are, where we see who and what we are, where we are in life, and then we're willing to let those things go that hinder us. And so the ship, in order to go forward, has to do what? It has to pull up the anchor. It has to untie itself from the big stanchions there in the pier. It has to take the ropes off before it can ever go to sea. And so it is with us. We've got to cut loose. We've got to cut some things loose from our life in order to go forward. And so I ask us to consider some of these things today. And for example, what about resentment? Each of us can have this occur in our lives, can't we? Resentment towards somebody because someone somewhere did something wrong to us. You know, there isn't one of us, and I bet it's happened more than once. But the question then is, do we hold on to that? Do we hold on to the resentment and nurse it, and so it grows in us? Hebrews 12 and verse 14. Follow peace with all men, it says, and holiness without which no man will see the Lord, looking diligently, lest any man fail of the grace of God, lest a root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled. I mean, that has happened to so many people as they bounce from church to church to church and place to place to place because of the resentments that they think they have because they were done wrong somehow or didn't get what they expected or hoped for. Then there's regret, isn't there? I mean, anybody here experienced something where things didn't turn out really the way that they should have? Have you ever had a case where, you know, if you would have bought into Google at such and such a time, you had an offer to buy, and yet you didn't, and now it becomes, you know, worth millions, and you go, whoa. And so you live with that, you know. I could have been this. I could have been a doctor. I know a guy in the Church of God who was a brilliant man, but he was going to be a doctor, and he decided to go into the church, and they hired him, and he worked in editorial, and he's a brilliant researcher, and I just loved his sermons and everything. But he became so bitter that he never became anything. And he felt like he had wasted his whole life in the Church of God when he could have been a doctor. He could have been somebody. You see what my point? Holding on to that so he becomes bitter, writes against the church, when he could have been God, not a doctor. He could have been so much more by suffering and letting a few things go, like Joseph in prison, you know, like others down through history that suffered affliction for something that is so worthwhile and so valuable and so transcendent and so majestic and so glorious that it's beyond our human comprehension. And yet we'll hold on to a banana. So silly, so silly. And God tells us to go forward. We hang on to those memories instead of looking forward to future opportunities. What should have been doesn't matter. What could have been is past. What exists today is of real value, a calling into God's kingdom and his family. And the irony of this is just incredible. Here we sit with the greatest opportunity presented to man, and we have regrets for things in the past. You understand? Imagine how much. Think of the irony. How much will we regret if we don't follow up on the calling we have today? Because we want to hold on to regrets in the past. Then there's guilt. There is a place for guilt. And I remember I talked to the man who was manager for Anheuser-Busch Warehouse, and he asked me some questions about my beliefs, and I told him, he said, man, I'm not going there. I spent 5 years and several thousand dollars going to psychiatrists to get over the guilt, you know? And that's what they do. We have a whole, you know, study of psychology to be able to get people away from their guilt, to help them deal with their guilt. But guilt is there to make us do the right thing, and that's what it has a very valid purpose. But what if we hold on to it? What if we've really repented and yet we still can't let go of some things we did wrong in the past? But I ask you today to just consider it. Jesus Christ and God the Father have put it out of their mind. They're not looking at you and thinking over, no, you don't forget, you did this, you were bad, you did such and such. He's not doing that at all, is he? He's forgotten it and he refuses to even look at it because of Jesus Christ and his sacrifice. Not that we're better or something, but just that because of the sacrifice. He refuses to even consider it. So if he can forget it, if he can let it go, we can let it go too. Because it just hampers us from all we should be. And it hampers us from enjoying what life is meant to be for all of us, the abundant life. So I want us to be reminded today, we don't have to brood over any incidents. We don't have to bring it up to others. We don't have to let it separate us from those that we love. God let it go with us, and we can let it go with them. We can let it go and forgive them. You know, one of the greatest, I think, impediments to the kingdom of God is fear. Fear is another one, isn't it? People have. Sometimes experiences teach us a lesson, and they teach us a lesson by hurting us a little bit. And sometimes it's good to have fear. Because of fear, we don't touch a hot stove. And so God gave us this for a purpose, and that is so that we will be protected. However, people can become so scared by an experience that they become paralyzed when living life. You know, there's thousands of different fears and phobias and all kinds of things that people have. And there's the fear of separation or loneliness that people experience. There's a fear of death, a fear of the unknown. What will tomorrow bring? I don't know. It is interesting, isn't it? We have no idea what tomorrow is going to bring. And so some people are afraid of it. People get so afraid they won't walk out the door of their house. And we've known people, haven't we, that were like that. Wouldn't walk out the door of their house. They're so afraid. And yet, it's just a feeling. Fear is just an emotion. It's not a feeling. I mean, it's not more than a feeling. And you know what's really interesting is this. I mean, I tried this once. I was really afraid once in my life. I was so afraid. And I just couldn't live with it. So you know what I did? I said, come on, bring it on. Let me see what you got, fear. I'm going to take every bit of it. Just give it to me. And you know what happened? It washes over you and dissipates. Because it's not real. It's just a feeling. It's funny. But we can let those kinds of things go. And we can be free. Free in life to pursue something so worthwhile and so wonderful. But you see, people, sometimes any change at all is resisted. New school, new job, new circumstance, anything. It can make people shake. So some fear pain, some fear mental and emotional pain, and sometimes it's even imagined what could possibly happen, you know. And it locks us in a prison of our own devising, doesn't it? Fear is a weird thing. It can serve such a wonderful purpose, and yet it can hurt us so much. Fear is designed for us to take action, but yet fear can cause us to run into inaction. It can paralyze us. It's really ironic sometimes. It's a matter of choice, isn't it? You know what I say today? You know what Moses says today? Don't fear. Let it go. Go forward. Go forward with our calling. Matthew 19. Fear motivated Peter to deny Jesus Christ 3 times. And fear will motivate people to deny Jesus Christ at the end of the age. And Jesus said, the fearful will not inherit the kingdom of God. He said this, fear not, little flock. Don't fear. It's God's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. There's nothing to fear. He's actually in charge, no matter what it looks like on the outside. He's always there, and he's always in charge. So anyway, if it's an issue in our life, I ask you to think about it today. What's holding us back? What has trapped us? Is it vanity of one kind or another? Is it that we think we're superior? Or we think we're more righteous than someone else in our eyes? Is our mind filled with desires that are perhaps unlawful? Are we greedy, content with what God gives us? Or do we have to have more and more? Are there addictions that we have in this life, things we can't let go of? If there are, they actually become idols in God's eyes. They actually become idols in God's eyes. There's an example that makes this so clear to me in the Bible in Matthew 19. If we'll go over there, go over to Matthew 19. And I know it's a familiar scripture, but boy, it is so appropriate to this theme. Matthew 19 and verse 16. Verse 16, it came to pass. I'm in the right place here. 19:16. Huh. Don't tell me my notes are off. Let me read this scripture. You remember it. Behold, one came unto him and said, good master, what good thing shall I do that I may have eternal life? And he said unto him, why do you call me good? There's none good but one, and that's God. But if you'll enter into life, keep the commandments. And he said unto him, which? Jesus said, you shall do no murder, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness. Honor your father and mother, and you shall love your neighbor as yourself. And the young man said unto him, all these things I've kept from my youth. What lack I yet? And Jesus said unto him, if you'll be perfect, go and sell all that you have and give to the poor, and you shall have treasure in heaven, and come and follow me. And when the young man heard that saying, he went away sorrowful, for he had great possessions. You do get the picture that he wanted to hold on to his wealth. And he thought he had kept the commandments all his life. We believe we've kept the commandments while we've been in the church. But are there things that we really have held on to and are unwilling to let go of? I mean, this man could have been called to be a disciple of Jesus Christ. It's possible he could have been one of the apostles. Well, I don't know. You know, the point is that he had an opportunity of an entire lifetime, that something that just should not be let go. This is something that was so valuable and so important. And so he had his hand here with Christ saying, come and follow me. And he had his hand here on his real estate investments and his portfolio and his wealth. And he had to make a decision, didn't he? Which one am I going to let go? Some of us are in the same boat. May not be big things like wealth, but there may be issues in our life that we need to let go. And so Jesus showed him that he was paralyzed by his own fear and lost out on this opportunity. So we can't let our fears let us lose out. And so this year I'm asking us to not leave these days of unleavened bread and forget what this theme is. It is that we are to examine our lives and we are to find those things that we need to let go of and we're to go forward. Where nothing should be exchanged for the kingdom of God. Is there anything we won't let go of? You know, there's a famous opera singer, it was Beverly Sills, and she gave up her job singing. And she gave it up in order to manage the New York Opera Company. And after some time, she bought a gold chain. And on the chain, she had these letters put on it, IDTA. And of course, she'd get questions about the necklace from time to time. What in the world does those letters mean, you know? She explained that she got so weary of answering questions of why she had changed her job, you know, why she had dropped singing and now gone to managing. And she pointed to the medallion and she explained, IDTA, I did that already. Been there, done that. So you understand, perhaps you are ready for this message. Perhaps you're tired of following the old routines, following some old time-worn patterns in our life. Perhaps it's time to say, I did that already, and be done with it. Perhaps it's time to move on, a time to change, to let go of some of the old boat anchors we're dragging along with us. And maybe it's time to go forward. Philippians 3, fascinating story, in this context at least, it is to me, of a couple that were in Florida, and they were walking along the beach holding hands, and there's a place there in Florida where they have a hatchery for turtles. Isn't that interesting? And they came across this turtle hatchery, and there were like 139 turtles, and they were all hatching when they got there. And so they stayed and they watched this process. And in the process, 139 little turtles that were like tiny little things hatched out of their eggs. And as each one hatched out of its egg, it went straight to the water. Straight to the water. It didn't detour in any way. Because somehow, intuitively, those turtles knew their destiny didn't lie with that old egg where they came from. They knew their destiny was that great, vast expanse of water. That's where they belonged, and that's where they headed. But I ask us today to think of it in these terms. You understand? We have a destiny, and it's not here on this earth. And it's not here tied to those things that are a part of this earth. It's not tied to money. It's not tied to status. It's not tied to those things that we have become addicted to or have made habits in our lives, as comfortable as they may feel. That's not what we are tied to. We have a destiny that is so great, and those turtles went straight for it. And that's what we should do, shouldn't we? Like Moses on that day as he lifted his rod and the sea split and it congealed as it did. And he told the people, go forward. That's what we should do. Drop it all and let's go forward.